Ron Ananian.
There's a reason why something fails or why an engine doesn't run right. And I know that's simplistic.
The Car Doctor.
Does the rear brake caliper have a lever that comes out of the back of the caliper body that the cable's attached to?
I didn't take it down because I was concerned about the brake fluid.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I knew sooner or later I would see one, and I saw it this week. A car that had a bad directional, but it wasn't a bulb, and it wasn't wiring, and it was way more involved than you would normally expect it to be. One of the things I've always taught mechanics over the years, and I believed in myself, is never get fooled by the simple repair. Never fall into the pond and think, well, this is going to be a quick walk, and how hard could it be? Because you've always got to expect the unexpected. And actually, certain things that are done in auto repair are actually done wrong right from the get-go. If you ever look at a receipt or an invoice or a work order for a car that has a light out, a bulb out, a headlight, a parking light, a taillight, whatever, it always says something to the order of, or usually says, left rear directional not working, replace bulb, or check bulb. It's never check circuit. And I think that reason is because when cars were older, you know, the cars in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it was, 80, 90% of the time it was a bulb, right? You know, once in a while it was a switch, or maybe rarely it was wiring, but it was never what I'm going to tell you it is today. I had an 05 Mercury Montego come into the shop this week. And Mary's a wonderful customer. She's been with me forever and ever and ever. And we have a great relationship. And it's just a pleasure to work with her. And the car came in for service. I changed the oil. I charged the air conditioning. It was low on charge. And it got a bunch of other little service items here and there. And I ran around and I did my usual due diligence, seasonal checklist, check the lights, check the tires, look at the brakes, that stuff. And finished the car and shipped it. End of day, shipped it. Gone. Mary got up the next day, and she went out, and she called me, and she says, hey, you know, she said, my left directional doesn't work. You know, she said, was it working yesterday? And I said, yeah, that's really kind of weird. I said, you know, listen, my dead dog that wasn't dead yesterday died today. I mean, it can happen, right? It's going to happen sooner or later. I said, bring it by. Let me take a look. She brought it by that morning. And I looked, and the bulb was good. And I said, you know, Mary, the bulb's good. There's something else going on here. I need some time with it. Can you leave it? She said, sure. She left it. You know, you look for simple, right? You always, you know, I took the lamp out. I took the bulb out. The bulb was good. I ohmed the bulb. The bulb was fine. I checked for power and ground. I had ground, but I only had 8 volts. At the socket. And I said, boy, that's kind of weird. You know, 8 volts, am I looking at a crossed wire, a resistance problem with low voltage? Am I looking at a voltage drop issue? What am I looking at? So I started going through it, and I, you know, let me go look at a wiring diagram because this is definitely more than just a bulb. And, you know, I kind of made the fatal error. I should have looked at wiring first. And let's see, the white red comes out of the left directional. It goes up along the chassis rail here. It goes through a couple of connectors. And then it gets tied into the SJB. Ooh, the smart junction box under the left side of the dash with this massive connector, this connector called C2280 with a small letter E, lowercase e. Wow, what the heck is this? It doesn't even go to the directional switch. Where's the directional switch get involved here? And I looked at the wiring for the directional switch. The directional switch comes in on the connector below C2280E on a smaller connector, a 16-pin, and that's the feed from the ignition switch or from the directional switch. Wow. You know, I smell a rat here. Turns out the smart junction box is not really a junction box. It's a control module. It's a computer to run the lights. In 2005, go figure. I said, It's doing so many weird things. I bet there's a trouble code for this. And sure enough, I scanned it, and it was setting a B as in Baker 2405 left rear directional circuit open fault. Trouble codes for directionals. Are you ready for this, America? You know, and it's been this way. What, the car's 15 years old now, so it's been out there, and it just took a long time for me to run across one. One of the first I've seen. We saw it a lot on Europeans, and you sort of expect it on a European. You'd see it on a Volkswagen, you'd see it on an Audi, things like that. But you know, on a Mercury, and it's not just the Montegos; it's the Ford 500s, it's the Tauruses of that generation of that era. There's a few car models out there that have this particular setup. And in the end, as I went through the diagnosis, and my thought was, when I got through everything, and I had a strong suspicion it was the smart junction box, I said, why don't I take the gray-blue out of pin 10 and the white-red out of pin 5 at the SJB connector at 2280E and switch them? And if the fault now goes to the right side, that it doesn't light up the right side, and now the right side directional doesn't work, but the left does. I know the left circuit is intact and capable of being driven. The right isn't, and I'll prove that the smart junction box is bad. It was a good idea for the moment. I unplugged 2280E, and something caught my eye. Oh, let me come back to this. I said to myself, I plugged it back in. I went and I answered the phone. I walked up front. I came back. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Let's see. Did I switch the wire? It was late in the day. I was getting tired. Did I switch the wire yet? No, I don't think I did. Let me try the directional. Left side works, right side works. I looked at the connector. Nope, I didn't switch the wires. I believe unplugging the main connector performed a reset on the module. And the car fixed itself. And it happens. And here's the problem, all right? And Mary understood, and I explained to Mary, and, you know, Mary was great about it. She says, listen, Ron, you've got some time in this. Charge me for the time. She said, I'll bring it back when it happens again, if it happens again. And, you know, it's just a pleasure to work with. But here's the real problem. Car's 15 years old. I checked with Ford. Hey, any smart junction boxes available for a 2005 Mercury Montego? There's three. And they're all in Detroit in some warehouse, and they're 6 days away. And it made me think that it's not going to be the difficult part. It's not going to be the car that we can't fix that's, you know, hard to diagnose. It's going to be the simple things that trip us up automotive-wise, that we're not going to be able to get the simple parts. You know, you can drive a car without a power window. You can drive a car if air conditioning doesn't work, if it's something older. You can't drive a car without directionals. You can't drive a car without brake lights or parking lights. And that's going to be a problem. And you know, I read an article in Hemmings, and I'll finish it here before we go to the break. I read an article in Hemmings last week. Shelby Jimmy gave it to me. And it talks about how what I've been saying, and this isn't about, hey, look, I'm right. I don't need to do that. You guys know I don't do that. This article talked about how everybody that's driving their Hellcats and their Z06 Corvettes and their muscle cars of today with all the electronics in them, in 20 or 25 years, won't be able to drive them if they have electronic problems. Because the manufacturers don't build those individual parts. They subcontract it out to a vendor. And 20 years from now, the vendor that built the control module for a Hellcat, the vendor that built the directional box, the smart junction box for the 05 Montego, doesn't make it anymore. They don't have any more of them. They don't have the blueprints. Well, they might have the blueprints, but they don't have the capacity to manufacture it. Because that small vendor is just that. He's a small vendor. He can't leave 500 pieces sitting on a shelf in perpetuity until somebody needs one. He doesn't have the pockets like a GM or a Ford or a Chrysler. And it just made me think, electronics is A, going to drive the car business out of business to a degree, and B, make those cars with points and condensers look a whole lot better as things go on from here. 855-560-9900, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, and we are going to be back right after this to kick the garage doors open. Don't go away.
Call me, call me, I love you, can't call me, any day or night, call me. for the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Joe in Pittsburgh. Joe, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yes, sir. 2004 Buick LeSabre, 77,000 miles. It's a harsh shift only when the said cooling temperature gets above 190 or so.
Okay.
I've been to several transmission shops. You know what they say. Some of them say, oh, you got to rebuild it for $1,500. And other guys say, just drive it. So I was wondering if I could just put a transmission cooler on it and put some of that thick Lucas in it, and that would help. Or
probably
is that
not.
A solenoid problem in those things?
Has anybody scanned it, Joe?
Yeah, I had a code one time. About a year ago, then it went away and never come back.
Was it a P1811?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So P1811 is a pretty good indicator of an internal trans issue, just, you know, how much do you want to deal with. $1,500, by the way, is cheap for a trans, so make sure they're doing the whole thing. Typical, well, and I guess maybe Pittsburgh's labor is a little different, but you know, North Jersey prices, a typical trans in something like that is between $3,000 and $3,500. So, you know, use that as a barometer.
It's perfect, though, till after 10 miles or so when the cooling temperature gets that warm.
Right. Well, the fact that it sets an 1811 tells me the trans had an issue. Have you checked it recently for codes?
Oh, it hasn't had a code for over a year now.
Okay.
I've reset it at one shop.
Have you checked it recently, though? An 1811 may not in every case put on a check engine light. So have you checked it recently for codes?
No.
Okay.
The light never come on again.
All right. Like I said,
perfectly.
The light may not come on. All right. So just be aware of that. So, you know, the basics for something like this is, it's basic. Check the fluid level and condition. Grab a scan tool. All right, somebody needs to take a scan tool and look at the individual, they call them TAPs, throttle adaptive pressure indicators. All right, GM is pretty smart. They gave us the ability to look at internal trans pressure as the trans sees it right on a scan tool. And I know you want to use some, change the fluid and put some Lucas in it. If that works, you know, go ahead.
And the cooler.
I don't think
it never gets warm.
I don't think a cooler is, well, Joe, you're going to run it cold all the time? Think about that.
I don't know.
Right? So let me get this right. You're going to go through the pain of adding a cooler, changing fluid, and adding a Lucas, probably spend $500-$600 instead of $15 to fix it.
Oh, no, I got an extra cooler, and the cord of Lucas only costs $10. So.
Okay. Then try it. Why diagnose it? I'm not being a wise guy. I'm not being a wise guy, Joe. You can't hurt it. It's already broken. If it works, it works.
Well, not yet, anyway.
Right. Well, I don't know. It's broken. It's set in 1811. Trust me.
But that was a year and a half ago, and it's been good since.
Joe, what do you...
I'll try it with that scan tool, like you said. I got one.
If you want to read a really great article on TAPs, throttle adaptive pressures, go online to Motor... Go look for Motor Magazine. I think it's motor.com. And go look up the April 2009... issue. There's an article in there about transmission adaptives. They talk about Chrysler CVI clutch volume index and GM TAPS throttle adaptive pressures. It's written by the great Wayne Colonna. The guy's a genius when it comes to transmissions. And I remember reading the article.
That is a common problem on those, isn't it?
Well,
it's GM vehicles.
Yeah, listen, this could be pressure control solenoid. This could be a leaking O-ring around the filter assembly. This could be a valve body issue. But you know, it's somebody's got to want to diagnose it. All right.
Yeah. So I changed the filter because the pan was caved in a little bit. And
right.
It's been okay since. So I don't know.
Right. Well, like I said, it takes some diagnosis. Oh. The problem is, look at it from the trans shop's point of view. And I'm telling you right now, $1,500 for a trans is cheap, brother. All right.
I know, but some guys say just keep running the trans shop. Other guys say you got to rebuild it. Then you got to drop it, the whole cradle, too, to get at the...
Well, listen.
You know what I mean?
Either we diagnose it and then repair it or replace it, or we live with it. I mean, it's you know, how hard a job is, how much money a job costs, how much the car is worth.
You know, none of that has any bearing. First, you got to diagnose it. I'll tell you a story like this, Joe. I've got a 96 Olds Aurora in the shop. I think I've got the last one left in America that's running. All right? 70,000 miles on it. The car came in because the gas tank, the collar that held the fuel pump in, had rotted away. They can't get a tank. All right? So they wanted me to do, there's a repair kit where you put a collar on and it'll hold the pump down, yada, yada, yada. And she said, oh, by the way, the check engine light's been on for about a year, maybe a year and a half, which means to me it's been on for 2 years, and the engine doesn't run right. See if you can take a look at that. The car barely got up the lip of the driveway to get into the shop. That's how bad it ran. Long story short, the car had rust inside three of the eight injectors. I went through the whole diagnosis. It had rust inside three of the eight injectors. I can't find injectors for this car. Not easily. I can't find a set of eight. I found two. I cleaned them out. I put one in. It runs a little better. The cylinder that was dead now came back. I know where the direction is. I got to get injectors for it. But I can't get injectors easily. I can't get a gas tank. I can't get a fuel tank O-ring. It's difficult getting parts for this car because it was only made 3 years. My point is, I still diagnosed it. I didn't guess. I didn't Rube Goldberg it. I'm not saying you are. But what I'm saying is, get off the fact of, this is too hard, this is too much, this is too expensive. Do you want to fix it? You got to know what's wrong with it first. If you don't know what's wrong with it, and running the trans cool all the time, do you really think that's a great idea? And here's my point, all right? Hear me out, all right? When you get up in the morning and, you know, it's cold in Pittsburgh as the wind's blowing in off the river, if you were cold like that all day, how well would you work cold all day? In Pittsburgh? Doesn't sound like a plan for longevity, whether it's a transmission or whether it's an engine. So my advice, go read that article. Understand a little bit about taps. Maybe you can find it on a scan tool. You can see where that's going to take you. But I think the long run, the safe repair is going to be to overhaul the trans or diagnose and, you know, repair what's wrong. But as you say, to do any kind of work on that, it's involved. You want to make sure you only have to do it once. I get it. It's a 70,000-mile car. It's 15, 16 years old. It sounds like it's worth fixing, but let's fix it right. Let's not Rube Goldberg it. Joe, listen, I'm here for you. I'll do whatever I can for you. But if it were me, I'd really try to take the time and fix it as best you can, the right way, one way. So you'll let us know what you end up doing, Joe. Motor Magazine, April 2009, talking about transmission shift adapters. Great read. And it'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up and saying, holy cow, are they involved? I appreciate the call, Joe. Good luck to you out Pittsburgh way. I'm Ronan Annie, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. You know, following up on the conversation from the opening segment, it may be that the car manufacturers, and they likely can't get the electronic pieces, or their vendors can't get the electronic pieces to make up those components to repair those modules that we're going to see go bad in 20 years and the modules that we're seeing go bad now. So it's electronics are going to be the chokehold on the cars of the present and the cars of the future. You'll mark my words, it's going to happen. Let's go over to somebody who wants to restore an oldie but a goodie, Phil up in Maine, 72 Carmen Ghia. Phil, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
You're in the East Coast, I presume.
Somewhere,
okay. Yeah, I got a 72 Carmen Ghia.
Okay.
We're the original owner. We bought it in Iceland in 72.
Okay.
And it's been in the family since then, on and off, in storage many times. There's very low mileage because it's been garage most of the time. And I've been trying to find a restorer because it needs some body work, you know, panels on the side and all that. But
so is the question?
Haven't had much luck.
Is the question? How do you find somebody?
Yeah, I haven't found any. Every place I've, you know, went on the internet, every place I found is either on California or Middle West or someplace. But haven't had any luck finding someone on the East Coast. So that's what I'm trying to locate. You can direct me, put me in the right direction to find
someone.
Well,
I can't because I don't know anyone that, you know, specifically does Carmen Ghee. I don't know too many restorers that are left anymore. Most of the good ones have retired or died, in all honesty.
That's what I'm wondering.
That's no lie. The fella that painted the 55 black, Chuck, is approaching 79 years old, and he doesn't paint anymore. He has, he's retired. He's hung up his paint gun. After doing it for 60 years, and I think that's where a lot of this is going. Are there guys out there? Yeah. How do you find them? Well, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's hanging out at car shows. It's listening to everybody. Hey, who did this car? Who did that car? One of the things I will tell you is, unless you have people to verify it, going to a shop and just listening to the shop alone tell you what a great job they do. That doesn't cut it. It's everybody always tells you they're great. You know, they're going to be on time. They're going to be under budget until you hand them the check, and then you don't see the car for 2 years.
Yeah,
it's an issue.
A couple of years ago, I listened. There was a company in Rhode Island or someplace, and of course the price was out of sight, $10,000 to $15,000. But we weren't ready to do it at that time.
Wait. What do you think this is going to cost to restore, Phil?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's a car that's been in the family. We love it. We bought it, like I say, new in Iceland.
Right.
And
regardless,
the restore company, probably going to cost two or three times what we paid for it new.
Let me say it like this, Phil. Regardless of where you bought it, regardless of what you paid for it, I would expect a restoration depending upon how much body work it needs, painting the car, polishing the chrome, going through it mechanically. You could spend 40 to 50 grand without even batting an eye.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I understand.
Phil, it cost me $1,400 to have the stainless on the hot rod buffed and polished. And that was nine years ago. But I had to find the right guy. I had to find the right guy to do it that wouldn't hurt it, because they were one-off pieces. They were the original pieces. You almost can't put a price tag on restoration. You can't have it both ways, brother. Yeah, you can't. You can't. You know, I want to do this right, but I want to do it cheap. That doesn't work. It's like auto repair.
Well, I understand that. Yeah, we're not too concerned what it's going to cost, because this car's been in the family.
All right.
It's been all over the world, was in Iceland and
well,
Europe.
I just, like I said, you started out the conversation talking about you think it was going to cost $12,000 or $15,000, and you thought that was a lot of money. You said that here 2 minutes ago. So I want to make sure your head is screwed on you go out looking.
No, I didn't think that was going to cost a lot. I thought we weren't ready to do it at the time, about 3 or 4 years ago.
It really depends on actual condition. And the what you don't see, but it's there. You know, is there any rust?
Yeah.
If it's been up in Maine for the past 50 years, all right? And what does it look like in the places you can't see? How much of a restoration do you want to do? Do you want to do a strip the body down to nothing and start over? Or do you want to just do a rolling restoration? And there's all different levels of it, I would try car clubs. I would try forums. I would talk to people. The research alone could take you up to a year. I would be diving into Hemmings and seeing, who's doing what in Hemmings. Read some of the articles there, some of the shops they talk about there. There's a few guys in Connecticut. I can't think of their names, that I've read stories about their shops in Connecticut. And I believe there's one in Vermont. If I think of it, I'll mention it. And if the listeners have any suggestions, somebody to restore something like that, we'll talk about it here on air. I'm glad to give somebody a plug on air. You have to do the research to verify the accuracy of it. But, that's how bad do you want it? And that's the problem. You can't put a price tag on something without even speaking to somebody, because every move somebody makes, you have to understand, when you're doing a restoration on an older car, parts show up, parts are wrong, parts go in, they don't fit, parts have to be made to fit. This isn't, we're going to hang a bumper and it's
it's an hour's worth of shop time. It's, we're going to hang a bumper. It didn't fit. We got to take the bumper back off, redrill the holes, file, modify, shape, chrome, polish, whatever. It took us 7 hours to hang a bumper. You're going to get charged 7 hours. That's the way it works. It's you're not doing straight up body work. On the hot rod, if you ever, anybody ever gets a chance to see it, look at the taillights on the hot rod. They fit better than they did from GM, absolutely. That's because I spent 2 Sundays. I moved this, I polished that, I ground this, I drilled the hole, I slotted this, I filed that, and I made the bezels, I made the taillights fit just right in the body, and then I made the bezel around it, the gaps around the, because I couldn't stand GM did such a poor job of making them fit back in 55, and now they fit perfect. So just, you know, just goofy things like that. What is that worth? And that's my point. That's what it's going to cost. You've got to decide to what level of restoration you want. I wish you well, Phil. Send us some pictures if and when you ever get it done. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
Just like a picture, she was laying there. Moonlight dancing off her hair. She woke up and took me by the hand. She's gonna love me in my Chevy van, and that's all right with me.
Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over to John in Vermont, 05 Chrysler. John, what's going on with this car?
It's the gas cap. That's what the book says. If the engine light stays on, check everything else and the gas cap.
Well, what's
so the, I checked the gas cap.
What's the actual...
I put a new one on. John, it still doesn't help.
John, what's the actual fault? John,
the gas cap.
John, listen to me. John, what's the actual fault code?
The what?
What's the actual fault code? Has anybody scanned this?
No.
Okay. Well, then you're spending money you shouldn't spend. The check engine light, you're reading a marketing manual, okay? It's not an owner's manual. It's a marketing manual. It's trying to tell you that there's something simple wrong with the car. It's trying to tell you something to alleviate your concern over your vehicle purchase that tells you, hey, you don't need to spend a lot of money to fix it. The car's broken, all right? If you had a if you had a sore throat, would you automatically start taking medicine, or would you go to a doctor or speak to somebody?
Yeah, we'll go to the doctor.
Right, same thing. Because there's multiple reasons why you'd get a sore throat, right?
Yeah.
There's 1,800 reasons on average why a check engine light comes on a modern vehicle.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Okay. So it's until it's scanned, this could be anything from, an evaporative emissions fault. It could be an evap gas cap related fault, but it may not be the cap. It may be the evaporative emission system. It could also be an oil pressure sending unit problem, which is common on these cars. There are a slew of things that are common failures, but...
The dealer says, put grease on the O-ring. Well, I did. It didn't last long. It didn't help.
Well, but wait a minute. But, John, how
so
could...
Then I got thinking, I need a grease that stays stiff.
John.
So, you know the ring you put underneath the toilet? It's called a beeswax grease
John.
Ring?
Oh, John. John, listen to me. How can the how can the dealer say put grease on the gas cap if he hasn't even diagnosed it?
Well, I don't know if he did or not.
Well, did you take the car into him?
Yeah. Okay. I actually left it off. He's doing other work.
Okay, and why did he say the fault code was on?
I don't remember. I don't know. I didn't ask him. He said, but we greased the gas cap, and the light went out.
Okay. So what you're telling me is, wait a minute.
Yeah?
You're telling me you took the car into an alleged professional.
Yeah, Chrysler dealer.
A Chrysler dealer, okay, which just means that he was drinking with the Chrysler rep and they signed the deal to make himself a dealer. Doesn't mean he's a quality repair facility. And I'm not saying he is or isn't. I'm just saying, think about what you're saying to me now. And they scanned it, and their solution was to put grease on the gas cap if they thought it was a gas cap fault instead of replacing it. Why doesn't that sound right? Doesn't sound right to me. Doesn't sound like how a professional would fix it.
That's what I'm trying to find out. I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, what they're talking about is if the rubber on the gas cap is dried out and rough, grease will help seal
O-ring.
It. Right, grease will help seal it. It's an O-ring, but there are multiple reasons why. Why a check engine light will come on. I'll assume at this point it's for an evaporative emissions fault, an evap system failure. But, you know, they can diagnose a bad gas cap. That's pretty simple to do.
I tried it.
Yeah.
And
it didn't work.
That didn't work.
Right. How did I know?
So I went to the beeswax.
Okay. Did that work?
I took the O-ring out. I filled that groove up with grease, and then I put the O-ring in and heavily greased that, and it's hanging in there. It's working.
Okay. So what that tells me is the gas cap is bad or the fuel filler neck is bad. So if we want to go on the assumption that it's a gas cap, again, it's an assumption. It's a big guess here, all right? How about it's not the gas cap? How about it's the top of the fuel pipe that the cap sits against? If you look at the surface of it, is it pitted and rusted, or is it pitted and beat up from age? The car is 15 years old, and would it take a matter of gently, and I put a rag in so grit doesn't fall into the tank, but stuff the neck so you have a rag so you can pull it back out. You'll understand why in a second. And gently emery paper the top of the neck where the fuel neck seals. Wouldn't that make more sense? But, you know, to keep grease or beeswax on a gas cap, I don't think that's how Walter P. wanted that car to go out the door. Somebody's got to do some diagnosing, John. And, you know, there's some miscommunication going on here that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So take it back to the dealer or take it to a repair shop that'll talk to you, but you have to be willing to listen. I want to stress that fact. Listening is a big part of the auto repair process. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
Here in my car, I can only receive, I can listen to you.
Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, here at your service at 855-560-9900. I should point out the 855-560-9900 phone number is 24-7. You can call anytime, day or night, as we're broadcast around the country and around the world on the internet, on podcast and streaming. And Tom Ray, our executive producer, will get you in the queue for the next live broadcast Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time. Let's go over to Lisa in Maine, 06 Camry, and some problems with the key remote. Lisa, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Well, thank you. Taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have an issue with the remote, the opening the car,
okay.
Unlocking the car. And it works for a little while. Guy at the garage got it going by doing opening the door, turning the key, slamming the door, opening the door. And it worked for about 2 or 3 hours, and then it just doesn't work anymore. Stop
okay.
working.
So
now my question to you is, do I have to take it to a Toyota dealer to get it reprogrammed, or can anybody do it?
Well, anybody with proper equipment can do it. So let's just talk about this a second. First of all, is this a Toyota factory remote setup? This is nothing aftermarket, right? These remotes are right
yes.
from Toyota. Okay. So have your mechanic must have some kind of information system, I'm going to assume. He's either got All Data or Mitchell or something. He's got to in this day and age. Ask him to get his hands on Toyota Bulletin. E is in Edward. L is in Larry. 0090.
Wait a minute. Toyota what?
There's a Toyota Bulletin. E-L. Edward Larry. 009.
E-L. Edward.
E-L. 009.
009.
Right. 009-07 that talks about keyless... Keyless remote
okay.
function, all right?
Okay.
And it'll talk about making sure that the body computer can see things like the driver's door open and close and some of the switches, what the switches are doing. It's possible that the remotes aren't working or able to be programmed or hold a program because there's a fault in the BCM in the body computer. So, you know, we need to verify. All right. Now, if both remotes, you have two remotes and they both do the exact same thing.
Okay.
Lisa.
I'm writing this down.
Lisa, do you have two remotes, one remote or two remotes?
Two remotes. But they both don't work.
Right. They both do the same thing.
I replace the batteries. And
okay.
All that.
Well, that's a good first step. But the fact that they both do it and they both have fresh batteries tells me it's likely not the remotes. Now, a properly equipped shop with a a correct scan tool, something dealer level, will be able to verify the accuracy or the quality of the remotes too. Or most shops today have tire pressure monitoring system tools. They can verify most remote function through those as well to see if their wireless capability is operational as well. I don't think it's the remotes. I think you're going to find it's going to be in the programming. And if it doesn't take programming, it could have anything from a bad door receiver to a BCM problem, or perhaps the something in between in terms of wiring. So let them diagnose it, take a look, and go from there. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, until the next time, the mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.